So today I'm talking about the chapter in Essential Earnest Homes called The Banquet Hall of Heaven. And that sounds like the major celebration, that everything is available to us and we just have to choose. And that's the truth. But sometimes we aren't feeling that way. We don't see the banquet. We see the dregs. We see the difficulties. We see the problems in life. And we don't feel like everything is open to us. And so today, I looked at what had been happening in my own life in the last couple of weeks and thought, how do I want to approach this chapter? And the part of the chapter that really sang to me was the same part that sang to Judy that she talked about last time. And so I don't usually do this, but I gave myself permission to cover the same material from a slightly different perspective today, because the Sermon by the Sea is known as Ernest Holmes' most enlightened work by many people. And I think that there is a depth to it that we can take, that we can take it into us at an even higher level. And if any of you, some of you were here, and those of us who were here all really enjoyed what Judy did with it, and it's been up on the website. So some of you may have heard it, and some of you may not have, and I don't want to miss the opportunity to share it with everybody. So here we are talking about it again. And the piece of this reading that really touched me was the line about Buddha. The future Buddha, sitting beneath the Bodhi tree, believed he had met all he was called to do to achieve enlightenment until the trial of doubt crept in, that he would be able to express what he knew, and that maybe it was better kept to himself than shared with the world. Have you ever had the trial of doubt? I know I do. You know, it's like there is often a moment before I get up to speak that I think, who am I to tell anybody how to live? And then I realize that I'm not telling anybody how to live. I'm sharing my life and what I've learned, and if it works for them, they'll take it in, and if it doesn't, they won't. And it's entirely up to everybody to get what they need to get. And many years ago, I was giving talks at my church in Denver, and a woman came up to me and she said, "You absolutely changed my life." And I said, "For the better." And she said, "Yes, I went back to school, I got a degree, I have a new job, and it was all because of you, because of what you said." And I said, "What did I say?" And she told me, and it wasn't what I said. I knew what I had said. What she heard wasn't what I said. And I realized that this isn't really up to me. I show up, I give the best I have, and you'll take what you take from what I say. So that gives me a sense of ease, and my response isn't so reluctant, because I'm willing for you to take what you want to hear from whatever it is that I share today. So I always notice before I'm speaking, Judy has said before that she always wants to look to see what the topic is before she signs on for it, because she knows she's going to have an experience of it during the weeks before she gets up to talk. And what's happened to me in the last week has been a series of very touching to me experiences about seeing the uniqueness of particular individuals, and particularly how they claim and know their uniqueness. And the first one happened at an Abraham Hicks workshop a week ago Saturday. And when I was asked what was the biggest thing that happened to me through that workshop, it wasn't anything Abraham said. It was what one of the questioners said when he sat in the chair where they asked questions. He described how he had been deaf in his life, and that he had gotten bionic ears, and he was now a hearing person. And what he wanted to talk to Abraham about was the fact that when he was unable to hear, he found it really easy to visualize and to create and manifest in his life. And that since he'd been hearing, he was finding all the sound distracting. He was finding everybody else's thoughts really distracting, and he wasn't able to picture his own thoughts as easily as he had been when he lived in the silence. And so he came to appreciate the silence and to turn off his ears and to go back to that blessed silence that was within him. And his experience kind of twisted my judgment. You know, I have often thought that it would be a terrible thing not to be able to hear. And yet for him, he saw it as a wonderful gift that he had been given, and that he could now access the best of both worlds that he had been exposed to. So that was the first one that happened. The second one was an episode of Glee that was on TV last week. Anybody here watch Glee other than me? Couple. Did you see it last week?
No.
No. Okay. There is a character on the show, Sue Silverman, and Jane, whoever it is, who plays her, won an Emmy for playing the bad guy on Glee. She's the adversary of all of that is good and holy on this show. And there has been only one indication of a soft side to Sue in the couple of years it's been on. She has a sister who has Down syndrome, and she adores her sister, and she's very gentle and loving with her sister. She's mean and bitchy to the rest of the world, but she loves her sister. And in this particular show, she was really down on the Glee Club for wanting to sing songs of praise and upliftment and prayerful appreciation for God when one of the students' fathers had a heart attack and looked like he was about to die, because the student didn't believe in God. And so Sue felt that all of these other students were trying to make themselves feel better at his expense, and that their prayers were meaningless and wouldn't help the dad. Well, through this whole experience, Sue is very clear that God doesn't exist and prayer doesn't help. And someone asks her why she feels that way, and she says, I had this older sister who I adored, who was perfection in my eyes, and the world treated her so badly. And I prayed for her healing, and she never changed. So I know God doesn't exist. And that was her experience of praying and not seeing change in her sister. And toward the end of the show, she's with her sister, and she asks her sister, do you believe in God? And the woman with Down syndrome said, oh yes. And she says to the mean one, do you? And Sue says, no, I don't, because I prayed for you when you were young and you were never healed. And her sister said, oh, you just don't see the bigger picture. I know that it's all perfect. And I know that I'm who I'm supposed to be. And then she turns to her sister and says, would you like me to pray for you? Mm-hmm. And my heart just melted. And she said, yes, I would like you to pray for me. Because this woman with Down syndrome knew she was who she was supposed to be. And she was living a life of prayer and joy and connection to God. She felt her perfection. She felt her connection. And she felt like she had something to offer that was good to her sister. And it was beautiful. And once again, I got to have my judgment twisted that perhaps people who are differently abled, as Carla describes it, are such a gift to us, and they bring something to us that we wouldn't see without their presence in our lives. And certainly that they may have a life that is far richer and more joyful than we can project to them from the outside, where we don't know what they're experiencing. And the third experience I had was on Friday night. I went to see a spiritualist from Indiana whose name is Reverend Hoyt Robinette. And he put on a show like I have never seen before. He took pieces of paper that we had written that he hadn't seen after he had taped over his eyes and blindfolded himself so that he could not possibly see what was in his hands. And then he told us what was on the cards. And I had written on mine, he said, talk about your guides and ascended masters and any deceased people you'd like to hear from, ask a question, and write your name. And I had written the beloved, my guide, Cliff Fisher, my husband who died, Kate Hannigan, our friend from here who made her transition last year, Vitai Bergman, my friend who made his transition in April of this year, and Bob Cron, who was my uncle who died about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. And I added Bob at the last minute. I had written the earlier part earlier in the day, but I just scribbled before I passed it in. I scribbled his name on there. My question was, what's going to happen with the books that I'm writing? And I wrote my name, Connie Chandler. And when he came to my piece of paper, this man who was essentially blind in that moment, who had only the vibration of what I had written on that paper, he said, who's Chandler? I said, I am. He said, Cliff. Then he said, Jesus. Then he said, Fisher, Cliff's last name. Then he said, Kate. Then he said, Vito, or something like that. And then he said, Robert. And in that moment, I didn't remember that I'd written Bob Cron on the list, whose name was Robert. So he's more formal with his spirits than I was. And so he got my uncle's name. And then the question I asked about my books, the next thing he said to me was, are you a writer? I said, yes. He said, plan, don't hope for success, and begin planning now. He said, you have good energy, God bless you. And he moved on to the next person. But it was a remarkable demonstration that there are abilities and skills and capacities embedded in people on this planet that we don't expect or see or know about. That people who develop who they really are giving to the world in a totally unique and wonderful way. And I really appreciated this man who for something like 30 years has been developing his psychic abilities, learning and growing and connecting with people. And he goes around and encourages people in the way that he encouraged me with that message that he gave me. And so it was a powerful experience for me to see him because he's a joyful guy. He hangs out, he does this show with where he's taping his eyes and he's doing all this stuff and he's describing what he's going to do and he's laughing, and when he's listening he hears something like he did with Vitai's name, which he couldn't make sense of, and he says, Vito, or something like that, doesn't matter, that's what I heard, and he goes on and he doesn't take seriously the responsibility to do what he's doing. He gives what he has and he lets go. He isn't reluctant in his response. He's willing to give what he has. And he just trusts that it's going to be enough, that it's going to be right. And if it isn't, that he's done his best and he's cool with it. He's happy in his giving. And so I was really impressed with him, the third one, of people who made me question my assumptions about what life is all about who we are and why we're here and what matters. Because what matters is connection to Source. You know, there is a deep connection that is unique for each of us. And that power in that connection is what Ernest Holmes was talking about in this chapter. And the essence of the chapter goes, he has this whole series of questions that he asks. And he starts out saying, it would be wonderful indeed if a group of persons should arrive on Earth who were for something and against nothing. And then he said, find me one person who is for something and against nothing. who is redeemed enough not to condemn others out of the burden of his soul, and I will find another Savior, another Jesus, and an exalted human being. Find me one person who no longer has any fear of the universe or of God or of man or anything else, and you will have brought me to someone in whose presence we may sit and fear shall vanish as clouds before sunlight. Find me someone who's given all he has to love without morbidity, and I will have found the lover of my soul. Why? Because he will have revealed to me the nature of God and proved to me the possibility of all human souls. Find me one person who can get his own littleness out of the way, and he shall reveal to me the immeasurable magnitude of the universe in which I live. Find me one person who knows how to talk to God really, and I shall walk with him or her through the woods, and everything that seems inanimate will respond. The leaves of the trees will clap their hands, and the grass will grow under him or her. Find me one person who communes with cause and effect, and in the evening star will sing to her, and the darkness will turn to light. Through him, as the woman who touched the hem of the garment of Christ was healed, shall I be healed of all loneliness forever. Find me someone who is no longer sad, whose memory has been redeemed from morbidity, and I shall hear laughter. Find me someone whose song is really celestial, because it is the outburst of the cosmic urge to sing, and I shall hear the music of the spheres. Find me one person who has so completely divorced himself from all arrogance, and you will have discovered for me an open pathway to the kingdom of God here and now. Find me somebody who has detached her emotional and psychological ego from the real self, without having to deny the place it plays in the scheme of things, and without slaying any part of herself, because the transcendence is there also, and I will have discovered the ineffable in this individual and a direct pathway for the communion of my soul. And then he went on to say, I'm talking about you and myself. When I say find a person, I don't mean go over to Rome or London or even back to your own church. The search is not external. These people all exist in us. They are different attributes, qualities of our own soul. They are different visions. Not that we have multiple or dual personality, but that every one of us on that inner side of life is, has been, and shall remain in eternal communion with the ineffable, where may he... Let me say that again. I didn't read it quite well. They are different visions. Not that we have multiple or dual personalities, but that every one of us on the inner side of life is, has been, and shall remain in eternal communion with the ineffable, where he may know that he is no longer with God, but one of God. If it were not for that which echoes eternally down the corridors of our own mind, some voice that ever sings in our own soul, some urge that continually presses us forward, there would be no advance in our science, our religion, our humanities, or anything else. We are all called in our own way by that which was echoing within our heart to be in the world in a way that is uniquely ours. But how do we find that within us? How do we do it? We look around and we see what's going on, and I know that one of the phrases I say to myself most often is, even when it seems like something is going wrong, it's actually something in the process of going very right from a broader perspective. Because if I judge what's happening is wrong, I shut down and I don't access that internal quality of God that is being birthed, that is evolving through this experience, that wouldn't be called forward from me in another circumstance. So there is something in me that is waiting to respond to everything that happens to me, that is calling me forward in love to be more of who I am in the world. And if I am in judgment about it, if I say this is bad or wrong, I close around it and I hold it in my experience. If I say, in some way this is right, how can I see the rightness in it? I open up my perception and I ask for that within me to show me the light, to show me the love, to show me the power, to show me the grace, to show me the energy of God expressing through this moment. The phrase I used to use is a little longer, but it's also good, so I'll say it anyway. I used to say, I trust that my inner being always takes me from where I am now to where I most want to be by the shortest route, given my current vibration. But the shortest route doesn't always go through the nicest neighborhood.
I love that.
And so when I find myself in a not nice neighborhood, I know that there is something else waiting to be expressed and that I am in the shortcut. And it is going to pass. This too shall pass is endlessly comforting in those moments when I find myself in that not nice neighborhood. But that experience right now, whatever it is the shortcut to spirit. So in my own arrogant way, I didn't relate to that one. Completely divorced from all arrogance. No, I was okay with arrogance. I rewrote what Ernest said to ask you some new questions. Because he said at the end, I'm talking about you and myself. When I say find a person, I don't mean to go over to Rome or London or back to your own church. The search is not external. These people all exist in us. So I rewrote it as a meditation where we could find that within ourselves. And so I invite you to close your eyes and to breathe and relax. And allow yourself to look within to see what he was talking about. And see if there are any on here that you resonate with. There are some that I don't. I don't find that person within myself. But there are some where I can see that within myself, and that gives me the clue of where my highest perspective is going to be to focus on and relax with. So here are his questions rewritten. What if I could discover in myself a person who is for something and against nothing? What if I could discover in myself a person who no longer has any fear of the universe, or of God, or of man, or of anything else? What if I could discover in myself a person who is willing to give all I have to love? What if I could discover in myself a person who can get my own littleness out of the way and reveal the immeasurable magnitude of the universe in which we live? What if I could discover in myself a person who knows how to talk to God, really? What if I could discover in myself a person who communes with cause and effect? What if I could discover in myself a person who is no longer sad, whose memory has been redeemed from morbidity, and who can truly laugh? What if I could discover in myself a person whose song is really celestial, because it is the outburst of the cosmic urge to sing? What if I could discover in myself a person who has divorced all arrogance? What if I could discover in myself a person who has detached my emotional and psychological ego from the real self, without having to deny the place it plays in the scheme of things, and without slaying any part of myself, because the transcendence is there also? If I really looked at the true nature of who I am, what would I discover within myself? What beauty, what harmony, What joy, what clarity, what grace, what power, what energy, what talent, what skill, what ability, what love would I find within myself if I were willing to look at the wholeness of my being? Dr. Holmes said, "The thing that interests me now is that every person shall find his Savior within himself. If this is the only place he is going to discover God, you may be sure that it is the only avenue through which any way-shower will lead him to God. There is no other way. We have to find the divine within ourselves. That is the truth. There will never be an answer beyond the level of our approach. We must think, speak, and commune with each other and with nature and with God. The level of our approach is the only avenue through which there could be an answer, for we have free will. We are able to choose." And Ernest said, The great man is he who, in the midst of the crowd, can keep with perfect simplicity the independence of his own solitude." I believe that's a quote from Emerson. That uniqueness that is you is precious. You are God in expression, and so am I. We are each magic in a wonderful, clear, powerful, amazing, graceful way. And we can fight it and struggle with it and suffer with it, or we can explore it and claim it and celebrate it. And so if there was one of those questions where you felt the answer was, yes, I could discover that within me, that's a place to start. And in our conversation, in the second half of our meeting, we're going to look at those questions again and think about which one of these questions really speaks to me as who I am, or what question would I ask if I were writing the question? What if I could discover in myself a person who, what would you put there? What would be the expression of your soul? What is your question to ask yourself to bring forward the truth of your being in a unique and powerful and amazing way in the world? So that's what we're going to do in our second half today. And thank
Excellent.
You.